I started getting a lot of links to an eBay auction of some videotapes, and it was a lot of videotapes along a very specific theme, and it was for $2,500. Now, I wasn't going to be paying that myself, but I thought, well, I definitely have the ability to digitize them, so I put up a tweet and said, if somebody buys this, I'll digitize it. 3 hours later, a group of four people bought it. And so I'm digitizing it. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. The actual collection of tapes came from the stored backlog of a chain of record stores in the Houston, Texas area called Diamond Head. It had existed up through the 90s and then had gone out of business, with the owner storing away all of the inventory and, over time, selling off what he could as time and, I would assume, finances permitted. And after a while, it was clear he was doing more bulk sales of what he had, including this collection of VHS tapes. Over 700 music performances of bands mostly in the rock and punk and metal genres. Bands like Slayer or Thin Lizzy, Boston, Van Halen, recorded, as the pictures indicated, from a wide variety of sources, with handwritten labels or printed off of a inkjet printer, where, I assume, they were sold at the stores. After some arrangements back and forth between the buyers, the seller, and me, seven enormous boxes showed up at my home, accompanied by a very nonplussed postal worker. The trip had been relatively short, but even at that point, the boxes were starting to fall apart. Not because of bad packing, but just because these collections of tapes were so heavy and so densely packed that it was impossible for anything short of metal containers to have survived intact. Luckily for me, I have storage available very close to where I do my work, so instead of filling up my room with tapes, I was able to process them comfortably. As the auction listing indicated, this is a wide variety of tapes, numbering in the hundreds, going back in some cases 20, 30, or even 40 years, dubbed over I don't know how many times, some of them barely a soup of video signal, while others are notably impressive considering what they've been through and what they're recorded on. These tapes, which I agreed to digitize, represent a beautiful core sample of bootleg concert footage culture. They contain not just the footage recorded on VHS, but all of the little turns and twists of offering this to audiences that perhaps, as time goes on, we're going to lose. The first is the ratings. These tapes have ratings done by I don't know who, usually in the form of a school grade, A+, A-, B+, indicating a sort of subjective judging of how good or accurate or nice the footage is. In some cases, these are simply copies of television shows where a band performed in Japan or Brazil, accompanied with interviews and newscasters giving context to the show that you're about to watch, while others, clearly, were inside of the audience, recorded by what I assume was an extraordinarily easy-to-pick-out video recorder. By today's standards, a VHS camera is a monster. Certainly, compared to the video cameras that came before, they might have seemed like compact, sleek little boxes, easily stuffed into a large jacket, put into a backpack, or otherwise smuggled in expertly before being pulled out among a whole throng of fans. But really, when you think about it, some of these must have been the size of about 2 shoeboxes taped together, massive endeavors rising up above the crowd and obviously being seen by ushers, security guards, and others. There are moments in these concerts when you can clearly see the camera being aimed down or passed around to avoid the guards, to avoid staff coming after them. You see blurring, streaked shots of lights, which I assume are the camera operators putting the camera just underneath the line of heads to ensure nobody noticed what was going on. All through this, you have muffled and then unmuffled sound coming from the speakers. As people have endeavored to tell you, going to a concert in which nobody is holding up a phone was a completely different experience. And along with that, in a world of standard definition and basic color space, it was pretty well tolerated what these images and sounds would be. Much more the case of being hastily scrawled memories than professionally photographed and videographed affairs. For the tapes showing concerts from the 90s, things look pretty well established in terms of the size of these video cassettes, using formats like Hi8 and much better equipment. But as you travel backwards, going into the 80s and even the 70s, you really get a sense for how clunky these affairs were and what the level of tolerance there was for the quality of a video image. From some of the early Kiss concerts, you also get a sense for what constituted a rock show, the kinds of explosives and sparkles and flashing lights that were used to accompany the music. Once you get past the 1990s and into the 2000s, video screens rule the roost. But before then, it's projection, lasers, and massive amounts of fog wafting through the stage and falling down into the audience. Using some basic counting, I am fairly sure we are talking about 750 videotapes in this collection. Some of them will be damaged, some of them won't work, but in general, only about 1 out of every 50 is giving me any real problems. Instead, I let them run 1 hour, 2 hours, in some cases 3 hours, of recordings of concerts combined with interviews and cameos by the band, obviously meant to be capsules for people to remember concerts they've been to or to dream of the day that they can attend the concerts themselves. None of these, even the dubs of professional documentaries about the bands, really hold a candle to a professional product shot with the right lights and equipment and then put onto a medium like DVD or Blu-ray. These are, in many cases, sketches of what was played, reminders of what was once there. Recording them has been easy. At this point, after a couple years of anime fan subs, it's almost relaxing to find that these concert tapes go on for a while, that I only have to verify whether they're hi-fi or if there's something wrong with the tape, and then turn to the rest of the work I have to do. It is an ideal situation. This music, these bands putting their full energy into their acts, are a backdrop to the work I'm doing. They're culturally relevant without me having to stare at them trying to figure out what's going on. The resulting video files reflect, accurately, how janky many of these tapes are, how many of them are clearly at the end of their lives, and that I'm doing one last Polaroid photo before they completely disintegrate into plastic and rolls of magnetic tape. All of the tapes I'm digitizing will eventually go into a box and go into permanent storage at the Internet Archive, where, if somebody informs me that a particular tape was unusually rare and needed a very special process to pull its video off of, we'll go back and get it. But I suspect these tapes have already had a pretty good life before they ended up with me. Occasionally, I try to see if copies of these tapes are available online, and in many cases, they are. It's clear that there were canonical concert recordings that were passed around, split between people who were trading tapes or made available for sale from sketchy dealers at conventions or, in this case, the back of a record store. These were part of music. They were part of how bands got known, how the word about how they performed would get to others. They were advance notice of concerts to come, products to buy, people to follow in the future. And at the rate that I'm doing these, I'll probably be done with all of them in a couple months. Hundreds of them available online and playable at the Internet Archive. In this VHS journey that I've been taking, this is yet another glorious stop. I came in knowing vaguely about these concert bootlegs, remembering when I spent $25 buying a bootleg of Roger Waters at Madison Square Garden, which was my very first concert. And I remember being particularly surprised at how bad the recording was, how shaky it was, how I could barely hear the band. But for a moment, I wasn't watching a standard definition VHS tape on a tube television. I was back there. I was listening to this band play and letting the sound echo around me in Madison Square Garden. These tapes are talismans, mementos. And if I've helped make them survive yet another generation for people to either learn about a band for the first time, find out why they became so popular, and in some cases, relive their very own great moments in life. Let's just keep these tapes rolling. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Josiah Lusher, James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Craig Talbert, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, John Sturm, Eugene, Martin, Symbionts, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. A huge thanks to the four buyers who put together the $2,500 to make this happen.